Good evening, everyone. Have your seat. I think there's more chairs here or in the back. Dvaita dvaita mahamoha sarvarikshapanakshamah bhaswaniva jayatiko Ganesho dutariyutah Pratibhayah parolaso Nishakara yuvaparah Duti yuktah sajayatu Batukastandavanvitah Om Shantihi Shantihi Shantihi. Welcome to the Spiritual Evolution in Kali Yuga lecture series. Let me give you a summary of what we discussed about Kali Yuga. Normally, few words have been very misunderstood. Karma, as though if karma is such a devil that it will just grab you and eat you up. Oh, your karma will get you one day. No? Oh, this is my karma. So that's the word karma. Normally people do not think of karma and its positive uses and application. Similarly, Kali Yuga. Oh, we are very deep into Kali Yuga. Dark age, oh, things are falling apart. There is a very positive aspect of Kali Yuga too. So let me explain normally what does it mean. Kali Yuga signifies a time zone that is characterized by sloth and inertia. A time period collectively in our civilization when we are very good at postponing things which are good for us. Dropping our resolutions for good things. Where we are very good at taking action for bad things. Where we are very good at holding on to negative tendencies, negative memories, and very bad at remembering the good things. Okay? That's what Kali Yuga is all about. As yoga tradition believes, and for very good reason, that we are very deep into Kali Yuga. Evidence that how easy it is today to coalesce, organize extremists and terrorists. How hard it is to gather few apostles of peace . How easy it is to monetize our each other's misery and make business out of it. How easy it is today to mobilize both money and manpower by evoking the pity factor. Okay? How hard it is to get people motivated by awakening, by inspiring their wisdom, their pure unconditional love and compassion. And even if it happens, then you can see another amazing thing. That how long are this pure, unconditional love and compassion driven? Resolutions last very short period. You have to keep reminding, keep reminding, keep reminding, keep reminding. And you have to keep listening that you have become a pest by reminding about the importance of peace, love, compassion, kindness. How entrenched we are in looking at the so-called transparency and accountability when it comes to such people who are committed, or such organizations that are committed to doing something good for a broader aspect of humanity. This is hallmark of Kali Yuga. And always there is a reason why it is so. You find more corruption in so-called religious and spiritual organizations than such organizations which are purely driven by their bottom line. No? Look at, there is a greater degree of loyalty, commitment, accountability, transparency in businesses which are involved in purely mundane matters. There we understand very well that how ultimately truth alone wins. Foundation for our success is truth. There we do not talk about truth. We simply put this idea of truth into action. In spiritual organizations, religious organizations, we shout very loud about truth. And we practice very little truth. Look at, no, this is what is called Kali Yuga. And this is a widespread phenomena. There are certain times when this phenomena is less prevalent, and there are times in our human history when this phenomena is more prevalent. So there are times when we are more into Kali Yuga, there are times when we are less into Kali Yuga. There are times when we have almost no Kali Yuga, although everything good and bad, you know, come together, walk together in our lives, in individual life and collective life or social life. Sreyascha, Preyascha, Sampariyetau. Both good and pleasant. Painful as well as joyful events and experiences come into our life somehow side by side. Sometimes good and auspicious is very bright, comes as a sweeping force compared to that which is inauspicious and bad. Sometimes other way around. So all good and bad and right and wrong, that which seems to be meritorious and non-meritorious, walk into our life side by side. When good and meritorious, good and auspicious forces and experiences last longer, we are toward the on the side of golden age, Satyuga. When the bad ones, negative ones, destructive ones last longer, then it means we are on the side of Kali Yuga. So you can clearly see what is happening in the world. One thing is very important to know. That is the pace at which time itself flows is so very important to know that. It is on the basis of the degree of our tolerance, forbearance, compassion, forgiveness, and most importantly, all these things can be summed in one word, that is patience. Time flows slowly. So, according to scriptures, the golden age lasts for a very long period of time. And as we keep moving toward Kali Yuga, the dark age, the time moves very fast. There is golden age in each of us. Our early childhood is golden age. Some poet said, "Oh Lord, give me just first 5 years of my life, 7 years of my life, and take the rest." It is an amazing age of purity. Okay? Age of purity. Age of trust. Age of confidence. Age of finding happiness in small little things. As a young child, 3-4 year old child, you get hurt. You start bleeding. Mother says, "Here is pomegranate. See? It will, because you feel, it's bleeding, so it's scary." Mother gives few grains of pomegranate seeds. And you are happy that you are cured. And you are playing next moment again. Okay? That's such an age of purity. Mother says, see, when you are crying and tears are dropping, mom, dad, they just pick up one drop of the tear. See, salty. This is salt of life. Don't waste it. Okay. And then child is happy that he is not wasting salt of life. No? Such an amazing age. Children get in trouble, they get in fight. As though if the whole world has fallen apart. Next moment, they are playing with the same very child who just a minute ago was his or her staunch enemy. No? Oppressor. Now everything back to normal. As we age, these tendencies disappear. Okay. Other thing is, in early childhood, as if time doesn't exist. Things are whatever they are. World out there, there is hope. No, the armies are colliding with each other. Things are falling apart. In family, there is abundant food, clothes, shelter, or total lack of all these things. Mom and dad's lap is so reassuring. Life goes on. It is later. We had a very tough childhood. What tough childhood are you talking about? It is only when the idea of concept of good, bad, right, wrong somehow entered your mind. Before that, things were much better. Okay. Pleasant scars, pleasant experiences furnished your foundation, unpleasant ones did not make much scratch. Later on, it's reverse. As a teenager, everything. Things start moving faster, faster. And when you hit your 40s, as many of you have already experienced, things move much faster. When you hit your 50s and 60s, it's like suddenly what happened? You know, just it looks like just a few days ago there was New Year's and now suddenly there's another New Year's coming. You know, everything moves so fast. That is Kali Yuga. When our vitality, strength, stamina, enthusiasm, courage, love for innovation, love for creative thoughts and ideas decline, we are into Kali Yuga. Things move very fast. Whereas it's other way around. So, but with this, there is a very unique thing that is happening. That is, as we age, if we have learned the art of making a good use of Kali Yuga attributes, characteristics and qualities, it's a very wonderful time in our life. Similarly, at the social level, you read scriptures, amazing, amazing things you will find. Read Old Testament. Somebody lived for 800 years. Somebody lived, 500 years. Somebody bore child, had a child. In his 70s, somebody had child when he was 300 years old. And today, such stories seem to be just pure myth. Okay? But do you see anybody in New Testament who seem to have 120, 100, 180 or 200 years life? No. Because Old Testament is referring to very, very, very old times. And in those days, things also moved at a very slow pace. And in those days, when you read more of such scriptures, amazing thing is, people had to do their practices, their sadhana, their tapas, their austerity for tens of years, hundreds of years in order to achieve something solid. How many of us today have the patience to do our sadhana for 40 years? Moses' life was not very long, it was only 120 years. Out of that, when he left Egypt, he put aside 40 years to do practice so that he could gather some strength and energy, both physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual, all, and come back, help people find their freedom. How many people in the world today will be willing to put aside 40 years of their life and then come back and start their project of helping, serving, loving, and caring, and making difference? In 40 years' time, perhaps 40 yugas will pass at mental level. Okay. That is what happens. But if we understand this phenomena, this is amazing. What we could not achieve by doing 100 years of sadhana 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, now we can achieve it just in 1 year time. That's the beauty of Kali Yuga. And this thing has been said in the scriptures repeatedly. In previous era, previous stages of civilization, when there was greater light, greater stability, greater wisdom and knowledge, people had to do long, long practices. And also their mantras were, let's say for example, prayer. Their Bibles were quite long, big. Even in the field of, even in academic fields, shocking thing you will notice. If today somebody writes a book, size of, let's say, Eliade, how many people will read it? Mahabharata, 100,000 verses. People read it. Couple of thousand years ago, in fact, more than 2,000-3,000 years ago, a dictionary was compiled in India. It's called Shabd Barahaspatyam. Another one is called Vachaspatyam. Do you know on the words beginning with A, A, there are two volumes, each containing around 1,500 pages. So there are 3,000 pages. The Shabd Barahaspatyam is at least 10 times the biggest unabridged version of Oxford dictionary, you know, the dictionary, and much bigger than the Encyclopedia Britannica and World Book. People read it. When I read that amazing dictionary, that prompted, what prompted me to read that was, I was trying to find what is the meaning of the word tantra in ancient text. So I ended up looking at this dictionary. It turned out there are more than 200-300 pages long explanation of the word tantra. Now, people had both time as well as retentive power to read those books. Today, as you can see, the system that has evolved from such a long scriptures, things kept getting smaller. Because people started having less and less time. Now, amazing things, whatever little time we have, where do we spend it? Average high schoolers, college students are spending around 5 hours a day on browsing through the clouds, internet. How much time are we able to dedicate for things which make us, which guarantee that we'll be healthy, happy, peaceful, and prosperous? You can clearly see that, first thing, we don't have much. Everyone in the world is suffering from shortage of time. Yeah. Our stores, Macy's, JCPenney, Walmart, and hundreds of other stores, they are full of everything that you can imagine. Only thing that everybody is complaining that they don't have time. And still, we have plenty of time to keep checking who just sent messages on the Facebook. No? So look at our priorities. If somehow we can understand the power of Kali Yuga and the privilege granted by Kali Yuga, we can make a tremendous progress. It's not all ugly and dirty and negative and so, you know, kind of disheartening. Because everything, it goes in the same proportion. We have only, let's say, 60, 70, 80, 90 years of life. Nature knows that we are part of a society which is defined by distraction, short-lived experiences, which is defined by an amazing fact that keep jumping from one thing to the next. So this way, first 20 years, 25 years, 30 years, a great number of people don't get settled with anything. Although people think that college, etc., are wonderful things, and they are wonderful things, but if you watch and observe the college life, how much time the college students really spend on college curriculum and courses, and how much energy and time they invest into partying. Party begins Thursday. Students come kind of groggy in the Friday morning. And of course, if not Thursday, then Friday night, Saturday night, and people sleep on Sunday. And quite often, Monday is, they are still recovering from the onslaught of the weekend's, you know, activities. That's the college we are in. So, if we understand these things and pay attention to, we can see that yes, nature is very amazing. Nature has given us great privilege. First 10, 20 years, nature knows that we are going to be God knows what, you know. And last 25, 30 years, first we pretend that we are still as macho as we were. But at some point, body, senses, nervous system, brain starts giving up. And therefore, not much is accomplished in that old age because we are at that time on the maintenance mode. First, one third or at least one fourth of our life is full of distractions. Last one fourth, if we are lucky, otherwise one third of the last portion, just maintenance mode. Work hard to stay alive. Not because you don't have enough worldly resources, but rather you have spent your own physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual resources that nature had given you. What is left is time in between. So nature knows that you should be given the opportunity to accelerate your practice, reach your goal in shortest period of time. That is the beauty of Kali Yuga. In many cultures, go into the interiors of Burma, for example, Myanmar, you will find that by the time in some of the tribal communities, in the mountains and the jungles of Burma, Assam, Nagaland, and some of the northeastern provinces of India, for example, by the time people are 14, 15 years old, they have children. By the time they are in their 30s, they have grandchildren, because nature knows that everything has to be speeded up, because the person might die. In all probability, people die there when they are in their late 30s, 40s. So in that much time, whole cycle has to be completed. And you must see the children, the faces of your own grandchildren, and die with somewhat biological peace in relation to your biological instincts. By seeing yourself alive in the form of your children and grandchildren. So nature does that. Children become adults. They reach childbearing age at very early. So this is amazing thing with nature. Nature knows that. When the seasons are short, nature speeds up the blossoming period in shorter period of time. The nature creates that kind of genetic structure and things, so that you plant things in month of June, and so that you can harvest it by middle of September, because after that it will become too cold. That's the law of nature. This is what Kali Yuga is. now. Therefore, on one hand, it is important to know that we should not just be careless and dump everything on the forces of time, that, oh, it's just a matter of, we are going through rough time, that's why it's happening. You know? Okay? That's why it's happening. We should remind ourselves that it's complete Kali Yuga thinking, that when you do something good, while you are involved in doing something good and something bad happens, then you start saying, I was practicing such and such thing. I was being nice, and that's why bad things are happening in my life. Lots of people say that. For last 38 years, it is shocking to me that I have been hearing when somebody is meditating, somebody is doing relaxation, and person has, let's say, nervous breakdown. I have found more people attributing their nervous breakdown phenomena to their peaceful activities than those who attribute their nervous breakdown to their wild behaviors. Person is taking drugs or has taken drugs very heavily. Person is wrecked and has gone through many, many episodes. And when that person, while involved in meditation, while involved in contemplating how to maitri, karuna, mudita, upeksha, how to cultivate love, compassion, kindness, forget, letting go. When person is trying to understand and incorporate these practices, and if something happens, say, oh my God, it's horrible. When you do something peaceful, how that your peaceful activity could become cause of your such disturbance? Whereas you see this logic, you know, that there is a close relationship between cause and effect. You eat good food. Good food cannot become cause of your what you call food poisoning. Food poisoning, you eat bad food, rotten food, that cannot become cause of your good health. It's common sense. When something happens in life, remind yourself, this is how you can make good use of your Kali Yuga phenomena. And thus, that is what's called practice. The word practice in our modern times is again somehow has been misunderstood. Normally, practice means technique-driven set of practices. Exactly, you do this, and then this, and then this, then this. That is just only one part of practice. Okay. What is normally forgotten, that fundamentals are not there. Fundamentals are missing. People engage themselves in practice without knowing what practice is all about and why are they getting involved in practice. Quite often, we adopt a particular practice just because one of our friends has been involved in it. That's not a very good reason why we should do a practice. Other phenomena is, just because, for example, let's say, you are fed up with your church, you are fed up with your temple, that is not very good reason that you run to another church and another temple. There is no sense in it. How do you guarantee that you will not become disappointed again in life with your newfound church and Swami and Guru and Pandit or church and temples? That's not very good. But that's what normally happens. There is a wave called yoga wave.
We know so little about yoga, and yet we get into yoga and we say that we are doing practice. When, for example, you do not see much difference into bicycling and yoga, what kind of result can you envision and how can you be aspired to achieve something more than what bicycling can offer by practicing yoga? You do not see much difference. Your whole entire motivation is either you have heard from somebody that yoga is a great thing and you lose weight. And somebody is promising the same very thing by, you know, promoting bicycling. It's not that bicycling is something not so good, but my point I'm trying to make it that we don't know much difference between these two. Both burn calories. And then we start assessing the benefit of yoga and bicycling on the basis of how much calorie you burned by practicing which one. Then you lost the, then you really, you lost the whole point. But once, if we pay attention to one simple thing, that number one, that we are human beings. All other identities have come only after we happen to be a human being. We are good, bad, young, adult, men, women, Christian, Jews, Hindus, Chinese, Americans, white, black, only because we first happen to be human being. And as human being, all of us share some common characteristics. Common qualities, common strengths and weaknesses. Common privileges. Common problems and common solutions. What are they? The most fundamental things that all of us have is that all of us have a body, all of us have mind, all of us have breath, all of us have consciousness. And all of us have our own very unique tastes and interests. Likes and dislikes. This is common to all. Most visible things that we have in common is that we have body. In each of us, veins and arteries, there is red blood flowing. Each of us have only one heart, only two lungs, only two kidneys, only one liver, only two eyes, only two ears. And all of us bodily functions are exactly alike. Exactly alike. We put food in the mouth, and the rest is accomplished by our internal system. Okay? This is common to all. Therefore, how sensible it is to understand that no matter which path we follow, no matter which practice we do, something got to be done to ensure our physical well-being. And there is only one practice that ensures everyone's physical well-being. Eat well, sleep well. Don't be hyperactive and don't be slothful either. If you eat fresh food, it will be good for you, healthier. You are vegetable eater or you are meat eater. No matter what's the range of your food and what kind of diet you adopt, fundamental principle behind those food categories are exactly the same, called freshness. You can eat fresh meat, fresh eggs, fresh vegetables, fresh milk, or you can eat old eggs, old fish, old. One is healthier, another is not so healthy. Okay? This law applies to everybody. Even those who eat bottom dweller creatures, snails, squids, even those who eat the non-vegetarian food, which according to vegetarians is, oh my God, it's bizarre. Even that food has some sense of being healthy or not so healthy. Some people eat spinach. Spinach growing in toxic soil. Spinach that is kind of rotting. Spinach that is contaminated by bad water. And let's say grasshopper, many people eat grasshopper, for example. There is a grasshopper which is fresh or that which is decaying. It had same impact for a grasshopper eaters. There is a fresh, healthy grasshopper which is source of health and well-being. And for a spinach eater, there is a fresh and healthy spinach which will be a source of health and well-being. Now, for this thing, do we need, for every little thing, to really consult an expert? But normally that's what we do. What we do not realize that it is only when the ecology of our body is already disrupted, only then probably, then we need an expert to help us restore the ecology of our body and internal organs and their functions. But in normal course of life, we do not need all that expertise. Otherwise, life will become really miserable. How in the world can one human being know everything about just the diet? When huge list of carbohydrate and iron and, you know, trace minerals and vegetarian food, non-vegetarian food and gluten-free, gluten with gluten. If you just go on, my God, you need completely at least 20 years of non-stop study, so that you can eat food by that time. Definitely you will become food maniac and you will suffer from food phobia. And that itself will probably become a source of misery to you. And furthermore, what about other aspects of life? Knowing about your mind, knowing about your senses, knowing about healthy way of enjoying pleasures of your senses. What about your relationship? What about your society? What about your church? What about your culture? Every aspect of life demands equal amount of attention. And if you do not understand the fundamental principles of life that nature has already kind of designed your body-mind in a very unique way, Just simply get back to that simplicity. Get back to that simplicity. And third time again, I will say, get back to that simplicity. Life will be just perfect. Who is guiding a newly born baby? Toward mother's breast. Why? No creature ever tries to insert food in its, you know, in one's ears or nose or eyes or, you know, the other two bottom holes. Why only in the mouth? Look at human babies. Look at animal babies. What kind of college and university? A monkey, a chimpanzee, a snake, a human being goes in order to understand that it is this particular hole is the only hole through which food should be inserted into the body. There is a powerful force in us called instinct that manifests in the form of instinct automatically. Hands reach to our mouth. An amazing thing is, within a matter of few years of pregnancy, the mother nature, Prakriti, is constantly teaching the coordination. That little baby, here is your thumb. Start practicing how to suck your own thumb. Start moving around and start getting a sense of, develop your brain in a manner so that you have a sense of, you know, right, you know, left side, right side, up and down. All that happens right there in the pregnancy. Who is teaching all that thing? Okay. And it, we are talking about a practice as though if it is something that has to come from God knows who. That is a problem that all of us are facing. Common sense that no practice can ever be accomplished unless your body is in your body is cooperating with, you know, it's cooperative. No practice can be accomplished unless your mind is with you. No practice can be accomplished unless your senses are with you. And the truth is, no practice can be really accomplished unless your loved ones are with you. Your wife, your husband, your mom and dad and sister and brother. Why? Because that's how nature designed you. You are a human being, a social creature. And this principle of being a social creature, or that which makes you a social creature, that applies even in your practice. Okay. Nothing in the world could be more painful than loneliness. Okay. In fact, in order to avoid only loneliness and the pain caused by it, we go through lots of troubles which are still much more, you know, joyful than the trouble that the pain that comes from experiencing loneliness. Therefore, when you design a practice, always pay attention to your body, your breath, your mind, your senses, your samskaras, your habit patterns, and see which particular aspect of your life is demanding an urgent attention based on what you discover. You look for a practice. That's the most yogic way of adopting a practice. Continue to be whatever you are in terms of your faith. Attend your church, attend your temple. And do everything that is you have been doing. When you are so-called designing a practice, just pay only attention to one thing, that you need a good healthy body to be a good healthy, to be a good Christian. You need a good healthy mind to be a good healthy Hindu, for example. You need a good healthy soul to be whatever you are and whatever you are trying to become. When you study your Bible, Bhagavad Gita, Yoga Sutra, with a disturbed, distracted, confused mind, you will not get anywhere. It's very difficult. You are always going to be victim of somebody else's interpretation and so-called guide. And if you are lucky only then, if you are really lucky, you will get guidance. And even the thing is, even the best guidance comes from the best people still just because the fact that you have a confused mind. You will, even the best of the teachings coming from the best of the people, from the best of the Bible, from the best of the churches and mosques, will become contaminated by your own inner confusion. Isn't that it makes sense? You are a very loving, kind, wonderful person, but your whole problem is that you are not able to sit. Your whole problem is that any time you want to do something, suddenly your effort is blocked by, hindered by your back pain, headache, constipation, cough and cold. Isn't that fixing that problem is as urgent as some of the practices which are said to be very, very fantastic by the Chinese, by the Indians, by the Tibetans? Even if you are, let's say, His Holiness the Dalai Lama, where is your nirvana at that time? Your nirvana is in your coughing. Really painful, very painful, very painful. It takes enormous energy to maintain your inner equilibrium. Peaceful state of your mind when there is excruciating pain arising from your compressed disc where the nerves are being pinched. Throbbing pain, shooting pain all from your back and all the way to your toes. And you are trying to say, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. Doesn't work. Be practical. Be practical. That's why first and the foremost thing is to pay attention to your body. Pay attention to body means five things. This is practice. Sounds very simple but extremely profound. And I'm quoting from Bhagavad Gita. Yukta ahara viharasya. Ahara. Pay attention to what you eat, when you eat, how much you eat, in what proportion you eat, with what kind of attitude you eat. It's going to make a very big difference. And I'm not talking about whether it's vegetarian food or non-vegetarian food. Any food is just fine depending on where you are born, what kind of environment you were raised in. But no matter where you are born, what kind, what is your background, always there is a healthy food that you can eat in most healthy way, in most healthy proportion and amount, at most healthy time. And there is a way that there's something you can do to digest it properly, assimilate it properly, get the maximum nutrients from that kind of food, utilize those nutrients, and live a healthy life. And for that, again, you do not need to really get into all the nitty-gritty details of diet and nutrition. Follow your common sense. Okay? If you have time, if you have energy, you have resources, and that is the part of your lifestyle, if that is goal of your life, go ahead. become nutritionist, expert in nutrition, diet and nutrition, that's fine too. But depends what you are trying to accomplish. Then next, vihara. How much do you enjoy being active? To what point your sense activities turn into indulgence, and at what point it's called repression? And no one could be better judge than you are. You don't allow your children, despite the fact your child is not exhibiting any kind of problem, and then but still no sugar. Once upon a time, I was driving, some yoga teacher was driving me, very, very friend, great friend of the institute and us. And he has wonderful children and have very good relations with the whole family. So he was driving. And I had to reach on time to get to the hotel and give the lecture. And by the time we are entering the city, in Denver, we are realizing, oh my God, it's getting late. So Shaili starts making telephone call to the organizers, local people, get this. So I asked the person who was driving, in fact, his children were there. So I said, hey, what kind of cookies do you like? You know, the child said, any kind of cookie which is not healthy. I said, what do you mean? Oh, all that stuff. No sugar, no sugar, no flour, and not this. Just, dry cardboard. It's not needed. No, it's not needed. Of course you have celiac disease or any such problem. Of course you have to pay attention to. But you have to learn how to be with your body and its need and supply it. So one thing. Next, how much activities? That was related to your senses. And then other thing is, how much exercise? 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. No one can tell you exactly. It depends what kind of lifestyle you are having. If somebody is, 5-6 hours a day driving tractor or working in the farmland, perhaps for that person, it's the important thing is just simple stretching so that, certain muscle groups have gotten too much exercise. Now let's balance it so that connective tissues don't become too, tough, or let's say certain muscle groups become too lopsided. But for somebody else who sits on the desk too long, different kind of. So you figure it out, which particular body, which particular part of your body is doing too much work and accumulating stress and has crossed the so-called realm of exercise. Up to a certain point, your physical activity is called exercise. Beyond that, it's called exertion. Constantly you are lifting something. 1 hour, 2 hours, 5 hours, puts exertion on you. And if you don't do, or let's say if you do 20 times this side and another 20 times this side, and it's all together only 1 hour, it is exercise. But if you do it 5 hours only from one side, it's called exertion, and that will create a problem. So you have to figure it out, what defines, what is the definition of exercise in your personal case. And you have to be mindful about it. Then third point is yukta chesta. Your thought processes, how you look at this world, how do you interpret how do you see your own place in this world? What is the nature of your interaction? What is the attitude? What is your feelings toward yourself and toward others? What is the ground on which you are interacting with others? Is it infused with love and compassion and understanding? Who else can tell you? that you are isolating yourself as a part of the practice of your non-attachment, or you are isolating yourself from your loved ones because you are not able to cope with that person. Who else, who other than you can really know this thing so properly? Yes, there are experts. If it is really very difficult for you, ask experts. But be open to listen to them. That was the third point. Fourth one, learning how to sleep. Very important. That part is somewhat extremely foreign to the modern man. And you can sleep well only when you know how to remain awake properly in most healthy way. What you do, how you conduct yourself while you are awake, has great impact on how you sleep. So how to sleep and how to wake up and remain awake. That is fourth and the fifth. These five things are foundation for your practice. Then there comes real practice. Real practice means something super simple. Practice that brings stability and comfort, happiness to you, which is the very, very, very definition of asana, the system of a method, a technique that is comprised, let's say, a discipline that is comprised of techniques which brings stability and comfort to your body. Yes, that's called practice. A system of techniques that it is comprised, the system of, let's say, disciplines that is comprised of techniques which brings stability to your senses and mind, and sense of joy to your senses and mind. That's called practice. A discipline that is comprised of techniques which makes you feel that you are really living in this body joyfully. Such a set of techniques is called practice. Practice is that which takes away this feeling that you are alien in your own body, that takes away your feeling that you are alien in this world, and replaces that feeling with a sense of belongingness. Your body, your mind, and senses belong to you, and you belong to your body, mind, and senses. That's called practice. A discipline comprised of techniques which enable you, which empowers you to be comfortable and happy with your loved ones, with your family, with your society, with your culture, and most importantly, with your faith, with your conviction. Such a set of techniques is called practice. You cannot be happy in general if you are not comfortable with your faith. Okay. If you are not grounded in your church, you are not grounded in your belief system, you are not grounded in your ideology, you are not grounded in your body, you are not grounded in terms of your emotions, definitely you will be struggling. That which reconnects yourself with yourself, that which reconnects you with your inner self, that which reconnects you with your loved ones, with your friends, that's called a spiritual practice. That which reconnects you
with the unknown, unseen reality, which you have a sense that it exists and have no idea that in what sense it exists. When you discover your connection with that reality, and you are comfortable with that connection, and you are happy about that connection, that's called practice. That aspect of practice is called spiritual practice. Other aspect of your practice where you become grounded in your mind, in your senses, and become comfortable with your mind and with your senses, that's called the psychological dimension of your practice. When you are comfortable and stable in terms of your body and senses, your limbs and organs are stable in terms of their functions and comfortable, then that's called physical level of your practice. The practice of asana, actually, if it is done properly, it empowers you to become comfortable and stable in terms of your body. You begin to enjoy your body. In fact, that's what defines the practice of asana to be real yoga. That is, the function of your heart is so smooth, so steady, so natural, that it's not disturbing the function of any other parts of your body. But rather, all limbs and organs are functioning in such a collaborative, peaceful, harmonious manner that one organ is fully supportive of the functions of other organs. Now, if your asana is not providing this kind of experience, then it is important that you must question the nature of your asana practice and see whether there is something wrong with you, or there is something wrong with the design of asana practice itself, or there is something wrong on both sides. Why? Because that is the very, very fundamental quality, fundamental thing. That's the very characteristic that defines asana as yoga and separates it, distinguishes it from other sets of exercises. Asana is not an exercise. Asana is a methodology whereby you restore sthiram and sukham, the stability and comfort of your body. Body is comfortable with your consciousness and belief system, and your consciousness and belief system is comfortable with the body. And this phenomena of comfort and stability applies at every level. Your heart is able to feel there is something wrong with the kidney. Mind, your brain is able to understand the feelings of your heart. And at the intention of your heart, your brain is right there to send the message through the vagus nerve, through the autonomic nervous system, that please do everything to get rid of the problem that is in the kidney, for example. That is called yoga. That's called yoga practice. So here I'm not going into describing that which particular asana is exactly for this purpose. My presentation, what I'm trying to say here, that if this is somehow is not happening in you, if this kind of result is not spontaneously manifesting, better you question the practice of your asana. Ask your teacher, and even ask the Yoga Sutra, and even just in your prayer, do your prayer, ask Patanjali, ask those sages who are supposed to be immortal, that, sir, where is something, where am I doing wrong? In one way or other, you will find the answer. Ask your teacher, go back to the Yoga Sutra, go back to some other, you know, good books on the Hatha Yoga, asana. See, why? Why is this level of disharmony? Why my hormones and chemicals are secreted?
Why the secretion is too much or too little? Why the hormones or the other secretions, they are not reabsorbed into the system appropriately? Okay? That's very important. This is what is called practice. This is when you will understand what really practice is all about. To make things simpler, forget soul part, just simply at this moment, because that is such a subtle thing. Just imagine, just you think, imagine, tell yourself that you are a combination of body and mind. That's all at this moment. You know? You are a very unique individual comprised of body and mind. What is there I should do that makes me healthy in my body and that makes me peaceful and happy in my mind? Put together, that's called practice. This kind of practice doesn't interfere with everything else that you are doing. You are a doctor, you are a politician, you are a lawyer, you are a businessman, you are a police person, you are a serviceman in the army. You are a mother, you are a divorcee, or you are a couple united in marriage. No matter who you are, continue dealing with that. Continue enjoying that. Continue being a good doctor. Continue being mother. Continue being a police person. Of course, try not to be a bad person. Okay? But simply see where is your body, where is your mind, where is your mind, and how the kind of lifestyle you are maintaining is contributing to the healthy way of living and being in terms of your body and mind. That's called practice. When you start looking at the yogic disciplines from this lens, then it becomes very easy. That here is why it is important that I must do asana and pranayama. Because it ensures my body and bodily functions. And here is why I must do meditation. Because it ensures the stability and harmonious functions of my mind. It helps me reclaim my peaceful, self-luminous, joyful mind and allows me, guides me, empowers me to transcend the roaming tendencies of our mind and all the negativities that mind is constantly churning out. The rest is all gravy. There is nothing wrong. Even the yogis say, namans bhakshane dosha, namadhyena chamaithuni, pravrittiresha bhutanam, navrittistu mahaphala. You eat meat, you drink alcohol, you have relationship with man and woman, live a family life, or even you eat chocolate. That's perfectly fine. It does not have, none of those things really interfere with your spirituality or with your practice. That's what the yogis are telling. Enjoy everything that is there in the world. Tena tyaktena bhunjitha. Enjoy everything. That is the very, very first verse of the very first Upanishads. Understand the true nature of this world. Understand the true nature of yourself. Understand the true nature of your body, mind, and senses. Understand the true nature of your cravings. And wisely make your assessment. How much you are investing in achieving things and how much you are investing in getting rid of things. And is this kind of investment is wise or not? By investing that much, what are you achieving? Ultimately, the thing that which all of us are trying to achieve is peace and happiness. How much effort do we put in terms of practicing a life of a hermit? And how little joy do we get from it? How much energy are we putting into living a lavish life? And how little joy do we get from it? That automatically tells you whether you are on the right path or not on the right path. Whether your practice is good or healthy practice or not good healthy practice. Because once you are healthy in your body, then automatically the innate wisdom of your body comes forward and tells you this is right path. This is right amount of joy pleasure should have. Here from upon this point onward, it's indulgence, it will be harmful. From this point, further backward, it is called repression and suppression and is going to be harmful. You will become a perverted person. Okay? Body will tell you. Just simply start respecting your body and you express your respect to your own body by reestablishing a harmonious functions of your limbs and organs and this harmonious functions of your limbs and organs manifests itself in the form of stability and joyful condition of your body. How comfortable you are, how stable you are. Then every practice is just perfectly fine. So here is asana and pranayama. And then there is a meditation. Put together these two, that's called a perfect practice. Unless you have a healthy body, clear, calm, tranquil, one-pointed mind, you cannot even do a good prayer. Half of your mind is somewhere else. It is disturbed, it is distracted, it is negative. It is trying to compare and contrast yourself. You are looking at, mentally, deep down, you are trying to see whether her diamond is real diamond or not. You are standing in the church, involved in the Sunday service, and you are looking at the corner of your eyes. Why is she trying to show off her diamond to me? Does she think that she is the richest lady in the whole world? No? People go to the church. Look at her hair. She thinks that, she's the most beautiful woman. And then at the same time, the priest is doing the prayer, and right in the middle of the prayer, person is able to capture, person is able to grab 30 seconds to see whether she is faking with her diamond ring or is it really real. So see here, these are the tendencies which rob our own inherent wealth. And as soon as you become mindful about your body and your mind, and all the inherent qualities, and as soon as you become conscious of, aware of this phenomena of comfort and steadiness in terms of being comfortable with your body, with your mind, being comfortable with yourself and with your friends, being comfortable with your church and with your God and goddess. Lots of people out there, they are really very uncomfortable with God, as though if God has really done something so wrong. And especially when you do not know anything about God, you are not sure whether that fellow exists, and yet you have such active hatred, active displeasure, active dislike to God. Why? You have no idea that in one of the remote islands who lives, and therefore automatically that has taken away your all reasons to be hateful to those whom you do not know. You do not know God, and therefore what's the reason that you focus your negativity on God? But as soon as you are comfortable with yourself, your entire discomfort with God vanishes. Your entire discomfort with everybody vanishes. That's the beauty of practice. And that practice is very simple. Put together two things: asana, pranayama, and meditation. And further enhance it with something which is extremely simple and yet very, very profound, which is described in Yoga Sutra, Chapter 1, Sutra 33. In the Secret of Yoga Sutra, you can read it.
Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, and Upeksha. Fourfold positive attitude, which you begin to apply unto yourself and on the life in general. The result, that simple way of sitting, simple way of breathing, simple way of eating, simple way of interacting with others, simple way of watching your breath, simple way of, you know, concentrating on one object, and simple way of turning your mind inward becomes such a source of joy that automatically your discomfort with yourself and with everybody else just vanishes, and you are a source of joy to yourself, so a source of joy to everybody else. That's called practice. God bless you all. Thank you very much.